Smoke walked outside while some of the cafe's patrons exited by the back door, heading for home to make sure their wives and kids stayed off the streets. Hawk Evans and the Shawnee kid sat at their table and stared out the window. Both of them knew that from this point on, they would never again strap on a gun. Dr. Garrett looked at the two young men, staring wide-eyed at Smoke, and turned his chair around so he could see what was taking place in the street. Smoke knew only one of the men who had ridden in, a two-bit gun handler who went by the name of Earl Cobb. He knew none of the others. He watched as they reined in and swung down, looping the reins on the hitch rail in front of the saloon. They turned and faced him. The quartet of gun hands spread out. Smoke backed up and entered the cafe.
They don't care that innocent people might be hit by a bullet. I won't have it this way.
Smoke paused by the hat rack and took two of the guns belonging to the young men.
I'll return these in a few minutes.
Keep them. We won't be needing them no more.
Smoke walked through the kitchen, a barred pistol in each hand. He went out the back door and ran two blocks down to the livery stable. He cut right and stepped out into the street. He was a good 200 yards from the gunmen who were standing in the middle of the street in front of the cafe.
Hey, you jerks looking for me?
Kitchen's trying to get us away from the main drag so no citizen will take lead. Aw, ain't he sweet. He's liable to take up preaching for long.
Smoke was standing by the corner of what had once been a general store.
Split up. Luddy, you come with me. Dick, Patton, you cut through that valley and come up behind him.
When Earl looked up again, Smoke had vanished. Many of the townspeople had armed themselves, but since Smoke had pulled the action to the edge of town where no businesses or houses stood, they could not leave their families unprotected. Most knew Smoke had done that deliberately.
Jensen! You damn yellow cur! Step out here and fight!
All right.
Smoke stepped out of a doorway behind the two men.
Here I am.
The men were lifting their guns as they turned to meet what their fates had long ago planned for. Luddy rounded a corner of the building and Smoke fired through a windowless frame. Earl saw him and quickly raised his gun. Smoke worked his way up the alley and stepped out to the edge of the street just as Earl was jerking out a spare gun he tucked behind his belt.
You do like to waste ammo, don't you, Earl?
Oh, shit!
Give it up, Earl. Party's over.
You dirty son of a...
Smoke waited around until Harris returned and told him what had happened, including the incident with the young men in the cafe.
How many still alive?
Some gunslick called Luddy. The other three are dead.
Luddy Chambers. He's a bad one. There was no attempted stagecoach holdup, by the way.
I figured Clint had one of his men tie into the line and send that message to get you out of town. But if he did, why not send Bronco or Austin or Yukon in after me? These old boys today were not the best he has on the payroll.
What could he be up to?
You tell me, he's your brother.
Fact I wish I could undo.
I'm going back to the Double D. I'll see you in a couple of days.
Smoke, thanks for pulling those gunnies to the edge of town. I find myself respecting you more and more each day. And if the day comes when my brother braces you, put him down. He stepped way over the line.
Maybe it won't come to that.
You know it will.
The attack came that evening, about 2 hours after supper, a time that no one would expect any raid. Smoke was sitting on the front porch, drinking a cup of coffee and watching two half-grown hounds play and mock fight with each other, rolling and tumbling on the ground. Suddenly, the hounds stopped and tensed, the hair standing up on their backs.
Get the guns! Take cover!
Smoke!
Sally tossed his gun belt and then a Winchester.
Don't you worry about us in here!
50 or more riders came fogging into the front yard, circling the corral, the bunkhouse, and the main house, and bringing with them thick, choking clouds of dust.
Be careful in the house! They're gonna take us on foot!
We see them! You take care of your own business!
Smoke arched an eyebrow as he searched for a target. He had a .44 in each hand. Smoke turned in time to see a man swing one leg over the porch rail. The man looked up, his eyes wide with horror at the sight of Smoke standing calmly, a .44 pointed right at the raider's head. Raul's Winchester barked and the man slumped to the ground just outside the bedroom window. The boys in the bunkhouse were laying down a withering fire that was taking its toll. Through the dust, Smoke could see a half dozen bodies sprawled on the ground.
That's it! To your horses! It ain't working!
Hold your positions! Stay put until they're gone!
In half a minute, the sounds of hard pounding hooves had faded into the waning light.
Is everybody all right?
Stoney's got a scratch on his head and Joe's got a burn on his arm. Everybody else is okay.
In the house!
We're all right!
Reload before you step out. Then we'll see to the wounded.
Smoke walked around the grounds. Seven dead and that many more wounded. Two of them badly. They wouldn't last another hour under the best of care. Smoke looked at each wounded man with cold contempt in his eyes. None of them would meet his gaze for more than a few seconds.
Throw the dead in the wagon first, then the badly wounded on top of them. The rest of you night-riding sorry sons can either find your horses or walk back.
Say now, I...
Shut up!
When you do get back to your range, pack your gear and get gone. If I see you again in this part of the country, you're dead on the spot. In a cafe, saloon, emporium, or church, I'll kill you. And I'll do it without warning. Now get up and get moving before I decide to end it right now.
Even the more seriously wounded moved mighty quick. Eli tossed the reins to a leg-shot night rider sitting on the seat.
You take care now. This wagon's old and the road is mighty bumpy.
You boys is cold. Mighty cold. Tossing the wounded in with the dead.
You think you deserve any better?
The hired gun chose not to reply.
Two men on guard tonight and every night. You work out the shift, Stoney. No riding alone. Ride in pairs at all times. Denver, give those hound dog pups something special from the kitchen. They saved our bacon this evening.
Smoke walked back to the porch and righted the overturned chair and took a rag and wiped the dust off of the porch furniture. The cook brought out a fresh pot of coffee and a tray of cups. Smoke sat down beside Sally.
There wasn't a known gun hand in the bunch. If there had been, we would have knocked at least one of them out of the saddle. Clint sent his hands at us at night, keeping the best, in a manner of speaking, in reserve. Why?
Denver and the twins had joined him on the darkened porch. A slight breeze had kicked up, and it was pleasant, but the odor of blood and sweat still hung about the grounds.
Well, the only way he'll be able to get any more men in here will be to double the wages. One of them wounded told me that some of the gunfighters is talking about this being a stacked deck. He also said that Clint's talking about attacking the town.
That would be a very stupid thing to do.
Well, that's what the hired gun said.
I've never met anyone like this Clint Black.
Sure you have. The East is full of them. They just operate in a different manner, that's all. They are ruthless industrialists who are like vultures, waiting to rip and tear at smaller businesses who are faltering, bankers who pounce if the payment is one day late. Men like Clint Black are all over. They just use their powers differently. But the end result is the same. Smaller, less fortunate, less powerful people, businessmen and ordinary people, are still ruined, homeless, and left penniless.
I'd never thought of it like that, but you're right.
The West is still raw, Missy, and it will be for years to come. Men like Clint Black come in here and tore the land loose from Indians and outlaws. They fought blizzards and droughts and floods. The only law was their own. They ain't likely to change real swift.
Only at the muzzle of a gun or at the end of a rope. This is fine country up here, and it'll be a lot finer once the likes of Clint Black are out of the picture.
Riders coming, boss.
Here we go again.
It's the sheriff and a posse. Stand easy at the house.
I'll make some more coffee.
Harris and a dozen townspeople and regular deputies swung down and crowded the porch.
Farmer came galloping into town and told me he saw a large group of men heading this way. We met what was left of them a couple miles back. They weren't in real good shape. Anybody hurt at this end?
A couple of scratches and burns. We were lucky. I was watching the dogs play. They warned me in time for us to get set.
You gonna press charges?
It isn't my property. You'll have to ask Tony and Gene.
Ladies?
Sheriff Harris, I think you are a good man, in your own peculiar way. But what would be the point in pressing charges? All your brother would do is blow up the jail again. That is, if the structure is even repaired at this time. Besides, I doubt seriously that any of those men whom we just sent on their way would testify against your brother. I've seen how Western justice works, when it does work. Those hoodlums would just claim they came over to... what is the word I'm looking for? Sort of like after a country wedding when the couple is, chivalried by friends.
Who, Rod, ma'am?
Yes, that's it. They would say that they were only having fun and that we opened fire on them. Oh, I'm learning, Sheriff. I'm learning.
Yeah, I can see that. But it might not work out that way. One of my deputies is escorting the men into town. I'll talk to them, see what develops from it. But don't count on much.
We won't.
You got something stuck in your craw, I can tell. Spit it out.
What is my brother up to? Those weren't top guns he sent over here this evening. Not a one of them has any kind of a name. At least none that I saw. He's got something up his sleeve, but I don't know what it could be. Those gunnies who braced you in town, same thing. It's puzzling to me.
I don't know what your brother is up to.
After this raid, I don't think there's any turning back for my brother. Personally, I'd rather see him go in a hail of bullets than for me to have to put the noose around his neck. And I'd have to be the one to do it. He's heading for a violent end. I don't know of any way to stop him. See you, folks.
Smoke left the ranch the next morning, long before anyone else other than the guards were up. He rode back to the valley where the ambush had taken place. For a long time, he sat near the flat where the men and boys were buried. He smoked a couple of cigarettes and thought about the lives that had been snuffed out in that murderous raid. Bayless would have told Clint about the young boys working the Ramuda, and Clint had not cared. Clint had callously ordered the deaths of three women with no more feeling than swatting at a bothersome fly. The law was unable to contain Clint and his raiders. It wasn't that the law wouldn't deal with them. The law couldn't deal with them. For whatever reasons, known only to Clint, the wealthy rancher was determined to drive the Duke and twins from their ranch and possess it. Why? Gold? Smoke didn't think so. Even though there had been gold strikes in this area, there was no evidence that any gold was buried in the earth of the Double D. No. It was just stubborn pride and ruthless greed and callousness on the man's part. Clint wanted everything he saw, and he'd stop at nothing to get it. Smoke walked among the lonely graves, pausing for a time at each rock headstone his men had carefully placed by each grave, the name and date carefully chiseled into the stone. Nate, Little Ben, Shorty, Davy, Duke, Matt, Harris, Eaton, Johnson, Forrest. He paused for a longer time at the graves of the boys, 14-year-old Rabbit and the 15-year-old Willie and Jake, boys who wanted to earn some money and see some country and have a little fun. Instead, they had found violent and senseless death. Clint Black had ordered it, and his men had coldly and brutally wiped out half of Smoke's drovers. No Indian attack could have been any more savage. Smoke knelt down by Rabbit's grave and let the coldness of the tomb wash over him and settle in his mind. When he stood up, he knew he was going to end this war. Clint wanted a fight, so be it. Clint was going to have a fight. But from now on, it would be a fight on Smoke Jensen's terms. He headed back to the Double D. Sally was sitting on the porch when Smoke rode back to the ranch compound. She looked for a moment at the way he sat his sack, and then she stood up.
What's wrong?
I'm going to fix a packet of food for Smoke.
Is he going somewhere?
Yes.
How strange.
Tony watched as Smoke stepped down from the saddle and walked toward the house.
Maybe not.
What do you mean?
There's something quite different about Smoke. Look at him. He's moving like some great predator cat. See the difference in him?
I do believe you're right. There is a more, determined look about him.
I think Mr. Clint Black is about to discover that he has angered the wrong man.
As the twins had suggested, Sheriff Harris Black got nothing out of the wounded raiders. Since no one was filing any charges, he could do nothing except let them go. Two of the raiders had died before reaching town, and a third was not expected to live. Dr. Garrett's little clinic was jammed to overflowing with pallets on the floor.
There'll be more. This situation ain't even built up a good head of steam yet.
I'm running out of medicines.
You better order some more, because when Smoke Jensen gets a gutful of this mess, he'll come a-fogging like something out of hell. Clint Black ain't seen nothing yet, you mark my words, Doctor.
Smoke stayed on the fringe of the Circle 45 range, whenever possible staying in timber and never skylining himself. The smell of food cooking drifted to him. He picketed his horse, slipped on moccasins, and taking the 44-40 from the boot, began stalking the source of the smells. He quietly walked to within 100 feet of the camp. Four men sat drinking coffee and frying bacon. A pot of beans hung over the fire. Smoke engined his way closer and smiled at the laxness of the men. They obviously believed that since they were on Circle 45 range, they were in no danger. Rifles were in saddle boots, and only one of the men was wearing a gun. The others had tossed their gun belts onto rumpled blankets. Smoke rose as silently as any Apache and stood for a moment, staring at the men. He knew one of them would spot him.
Morris! Boys! Don't none of you do nothing itchy!
What are you talking about, Granville?
Smoke Jensen!
What about him?
He's standing about 50 feet behind you with a rifle in his hands!
Sit right where you are, or you die right where you are. The choice is yours.
We're home!
Smoke walked into the campsite and placed the muzzle of the 44-40 against the head of the only one who was armed. He reached down and took the man's pistol.
Turn that bacon and stir those beans. Then dish me up a plate. I'm hungry. We'll talk while we eat, and then you boys can saddle up and drift out of the territory.
Huh?
You ride or you die. It's that easy. I'm tired of this war. I'm tired of the likes of Clint Black, and I'm tired of the likes of men such as you. I don't want to have to look at your ugly faces again.
You ain't got no call to insult us.
There is nothing I could say about you that should insult you. You're murderers, thieves, and God only knows what else. But your lives are about to take a turn for the better. I think you boys are about to see the light.
I don't think you'd shoot an unarmed man.
Then you're a fool. The only rules I play by are my own. I was raised by mountain men, boys. Preacher, Nighthawk, Cherokee Jack and Dupree, and Powder Pete and Lobo, just to name a few. I put my first man in the grave long before I had to shave. I'll shoot every damn one of you, then sit amid your bodies while I eat your food. And then I'll leave you for the buzzards and the critters. And don't you ever think for one second that I won't. You crappin' crud killed my men, and killed young boys and tried to kill my wife and me. Put yourselves in my boots and think about that.
Well, I can't talk for the others, but you let me and I'll drift. You never see me again, Jensen.
I won't. I'll hunt you down and kill you, and then have my way with your wife.
Dish up the food. Then you boys can saddle up and ride out of here.
You damn sure got that right.
We're short one hand. He should have been in a long time ago. And that ain't all. Fatso rode out to the boys' camp this afternoon to see if they needed anything, what with them hiding out after the jailbreak. The camp was deserted, except for Morris's dead body.
What?
That's right. He was shot right through the heart. 44-40 at close range. Didn't none of those boys carry a 44-40?
Jensen.
Has to be. Camp wasn't churned up with boot prints, just the prints of the boys and one set of moccasins tracks. And one hell of a big man wearing them.
He is actually on my range, attacking my people? Well, I won't have that. I will not tolerate it.
Boss, don't order the boys out tonight. That's what Jensen wants.
What do you mean?
He'll attack the house if you pull the men away.
One man will attack this house? Judge, you're turning into an old woman. Jensen isn't a fool. He's just stupid. He's up in the high country, miles from here.
Actually, Smoke was standing by the front porch listening to every damn word. Since Clint hated dogs and shot everyone he saw, there weren't no dogs around to sound the warning. The corral was too far away for the horses to act as sentries. Smoke had been busy around the Circle 45 headquarters, having more fun than a half a dozen schoolboys. more fun should start at any moment. The scream came from one of the outhouses behind the bunkhouse. Smoke smiled.
Let the fun begin.
What the hell's the matter over there?
He's a rattlesnake in the shitter!
Well, shoot the damn thing! Jesus, act like a bunch of women sometimes!
Judd stalked off the porch and stepped right onto a rake that had been placed on the path.
You all right, Judd? Jesus, your nose is busted. Come back to the porch, I'll get a wet cloth.
Smoke ran around to the back of the house where he had placed a jug of kerosene he'd swiped from Clint's storeroom. He poured the kerosene all over the back porch and waited until it soaked into the dry board. Before leaving the house, Smoke had found a long string of old firecrackers someone had left behind. He had taken them along. He lit a match now, started the porch burning from underneath, and slipped to the bunkhouse. He lit the fuse to the firecrackers and tossed them through an open window. Then he decided he'd better get the hell gone from that immediate area.
Fire! Ah, shit!
The hands in the bunkhouse began shooting all over the place at imaginary foes. When the other hands reached the water barrel, they were all empty. Smoke cut holes in them with his knife. Everybody began using blankets and coats and brooms to beat out the fire, which by now was threatening the wooden part of the house. It was a losing battle.
Sorry son actually was here.
Come to dawning, Clint had looked at the few firecrackers that had not exploded in the bunkhouse and at the bullet holes caused by nervous hired guns. He'd stared at the wedge in the door of the outhouse. The hand had finally succeeded in kicking out the bottom of the crapper. Clint had found the jug of kerosene and looked at the cause of the water barrels being empty.
He violated my property, almost burned down my house, and sabotaged the water barrels. I can't believe it.
It's almost like he was playing a joke, like he was having fun with us. I'll get that bastard my gun sights. The joke will be on him.
Yeah, we don't strike at the Double D. Not yet. We don't cause any trouble in town. Not yet. I want 5 men around the house at all times. Rest you fan out during the daylight hours only and start searching my spread. Riding pairs. No lone wolf in it. Man is too dangerous for that. Take off. The offer still stands. $5,000 to the man who killed Smoke Jensen.
The men of the Circle 45 hunted all that day for Smoke. The more fortunate of the hunters couldn't find the trace of him. Bankston, Nelson, and Clements had not shown up by late afternoon.
You better find them men before dark. You send search parties out after dark, and none of them will come back. Smoke Jensen's like a puma in the woods.
If I want your opinion, I'll ask for it.
The search party was organized and sent out to find the 3 missing men. Bankston had been found naked and tied to a tree, his own underwear stuffed in his mouth as a gag. Nelson and Clements were found tied to their horses taking a slow and meandering route back to the ranch. The men had similar stories. Jensen came out of nowhere, seeming to rise up from the very ground itself, and he moved like a striking rattler.
God damn, it's fucking unbelievable. I thought I had hired some decent men. I didn't realize that I brought myself the services of a bunch of mama's boys that believe in ghost stories. Ah, shit! Shit, he's in the trees. It's like he came out of nowhere.
Smoke had carried 5 Winchester 44 rifles to his position on a ridge near the big house. Rifles taken from Circle 45 hands. They were loaded up full, giving him awesome firepower before he had to think about reloading. Smoke sent Circle 45 hands and hired gun slicks scrambling in all directions in the fading light of early evening. Smoke put 95 rounds of 44s into the house, the bunkhouses, and the outhouses before it was all over. He put lead so close to sprawled Circle 45 men, they could feel the heat of the bullets. He could have killed a dozen men that day, but he chose not to kill or really injure anyone. But he made life miserable for those below the ridge. Smoke knocked out windows in the house and the bunkhouse. He perforated doors and stovepipes and punched holes in the roofs of buildings. His bullets smashed water buckets and the fancy chandelier that hung in the dining room of Clint Black's big house. The lead from his rifle clanged into cook pots, off the stove, and into the outhouses of the Circle 45. He poured lead into the gatepost of the corral and knocked the gate loose, stampeding the horses. Several of the panicked horses ran over men sprawled in the dirt, putting them out of action for days. When darkness covered the land, Smoke left the empty rifles on the ridge and, in a distance-covering run, vanished into the night. Flint Black rose wearily from the ground and walked to his house. He sank down to the steps and sat there. A gunfighter called L.J. McBride had saddled his horse and was riding out. On his heels were a bunch of the other hired gun hands. Apparently, $5,000 was just not worth their lives.
Shit, at this point I almost have to agree.
Sheriff Harris Black and one of his deputies made the Double D in time for breakfast the next morning, just the way they'd planned it.
Talked to three gunnies last night. They stopped in town for a drink before riding on. Seems that some unknown rifleman's been doing all sorts of mischief out at the Circle 45. Seems this feller burned down the back porch, tossed firecrackers into the bunkhouse, shot up some outhouses, and in general made life pretty mean for my brother and his hired guns. Is your husband around, Mrs. Jensen?
Why, no, Sheriff, he isn't. He's off on a business trip.
Well, looks like it's a successful one. Ammunition factories are going to be operating around the clock if this keeps up.
Supply and demand, Sheriff. That's what keeps the economy strong.
Smoke shifted his camp, moving much closer to the home of Clint. He lay on a ridge in heavy brush and watched the grounds through binoculars. Smoke could see that few hands had left the ranch grounds. They had rounded up their stampeded horses, most of them anyway, and the corral was full again. Clint had called a halt to the search and was making plans, and he'd do it much more carefully than before. Smoke had stung the man and he'd be smarting from the sting. Smoke suddenly had a hunch that he had overstayed his welcome and it just might be time to get gone from Circle 45 range. And the more he thought about it, the better that idea sounded to him. He gathered up his gear and headed back to friendlier territory. He was back at the Double D at noon the next day. He'd have to make a new pair of moccasins because the ones he'd had on were nearly wore out. After a bath and a shave and a change into fresh clothing, he told the others what he'd done. Everybody got a kick out of it, especially about the hand trapped in the outhouse and about Smoke blowing Clint's hat off his head.
But while I did have some fun at Clint's expense, he's not going to let it rest. He'll never forgive me for terrorizing his home and for making a fool of him. I don't know what he'll do next, but you can bet it won't be anything nice.
We need to go into town for supplies. We're running low on nearly everything.
Make a list. Get the wagons ready, and we'll go in tomorrow morning. We'll take four men with us. The rest of you stay here and keep watch. We're not prisoners on the spread. If Clint or his men are in town and want trouble, I'll damn sure oblige them.
Sheriff Harris Black and all but one of his deputies had been called out of town, helping to chase down two men who had robbed and murdered an elderly farmer and his wife the night before. It was a nervous deputy who watched the Double D people come in from one direction and the knot of Circle 45 hands ride in from the other.
I think it's gonna pop this day.
Stoney swung down from the saddle in front of Hanlon's Emporium. They all had a long habit, freed the hammers of their six-shooters.
That bunch of no-counts ain't taking their eyes off us.
Check your guns.
Stoney, Malvern, Waymore, and Eli checked their guns and loaded up the empty chamber.
See how they're standing? There'll be three groups of them. Watch yourselves. Sally, you and the twins get inside the store. Take your time shopping. Stay clear of the windows.
Smoke paused for a moment, standing by his horse.
Waymore, you and Malvern pull the wagons around to the rear of the store. Let's get our horses off the street while we're at it.
Smoke walked down to the sheriff's office. He pushed open the door.
Harry, pass the word to get the women and the kids off the streets, deputy. I think it's going to explode this day. Where's Harris?
Him and the others are out chasing a double murderer, and it's no joke this time.
All right, Harry. We're not going to open this ball. But when the music starts, we won't be wallflowers about hitting the dance floor.
I understand. I'll start spreading the word.
Within minutes, the street was cleared of horse flesh and humans. The sun beat down. Already it was a hot day. A wind devil spun around in the center of the street, then vanished, whirling like a dervish. Dr. Garrett began laying out bandages and instruments. Smoke and the double D hands had fanned out all up and down the street. They stood in the shadows of buildings and alleyways and watched and waited. Inside the saloon, the Circle 45 hired guns were sipping rye, working up the courage to try to do what so many others had attempted and failed, to kill the legendary Smoke Jensen. A drifting cowboy rode slowly toward the town. He stopped at the edge of it, took in the scene. Nothing was moving. Not a horse, or man, woman, or kid in sight. Even the dogs had cleared the street. He turned into the livery and swung down. Walked up to the livery man.
Well, what's going on here?
Well, so the double D hands of Circle 45 riders getting ready to settle some old scores.
Oh, who's your money on?
Well, let's put it this way. The double D's being bossed by Smoke Jensen.
Smoke Jensen? Here?
Darn sure is. In the flesh. He'd be showing some smarts if you just stood right here till this is over.
Well, I ain't never been known to be real bright. I think I'll go find Mr. Jensen and ask for a job.
Now?
But the cowboy was already gone, walking up the boardwalk. He stopped at an alleyway and grinned at Waymore.
Get in here, Connie, you damn fool. I thought you was looking at the rear end of cows down in Kansas.
I quit them after me and the foreman had a slight disagreement.
You mean you punched him in the mouth and he fired you?
Yeah, after he beat the stuffings out of me.
You never did have no sense. What happened?
He called me a bad name and I busted him on the nose. Your boss hiring?
Now, I know you ain't got no sense. You know who's ramrodding this outfit.
Man down at the stable told me.
And you still want to sign on?
Well, why not?
Now, I'm sure you're crazy. Yeah, as a matter of fact, we could use another hand or two. Got a horse?
How the hell you think I got here from Kansas? Walk?
Yonder comes a boss.
Oh, he sure is a big one, ain't he?
And hell on wheel with them guns. Boss, this here terrible-looking saddle bum is Connie. He ain't to be trusted round food nor whiskey, and he likes to fight, even though he don't never win. But he can ride anything with hair on it, and he'll give you a good day's work. He needs a job.
You're hired. Can you use that gun you're wearing?
I ain't no fast gun, but I generally hit what I'm shooting at.
You're stepping into the middle of war. I want you to know that up front.
If you're fighting that damn Clint Black, I'd ride for nothing but bunk and board.
Don't hire him on them terms, boss. He can eat more than any two men you ever seen.
You're a pretty good hand at the table yourself, Waymore. All right, Connie. Clint's hired a lot of gun hands. Some of them are pretty good. He's got 9 men in town right now, including Weldon Ball, Tex Mason, and Austin Charles. They're all over at the saloon. We'll wait for him to start the show.
It's a good thing I ain't eating today. Eating makes me sleepy.
If that was the truth, you'd be asleep all the time. You riding the line, Connie?
I ain't got a dime to my name.
Smoke handed the puncher a $20 gold piece.
That might make you feel better.
Darn sure does, boss. Now, if them battens over there will just get this party going, we can get it over with. And I can get me something to eat before I fall over from the hungries.
You better get you some boots first. I can see your dirty socks on both feet.
Waymore. Use the alleys and tell the boys to move this thing to the edge of town, up next to the bridge. I don't want a stray bullet to kill some innocent person.
Right, boss.
Connie, you follow Waymore and stop in at the general store and get you a hunk of cheese and a handful of crackers. You're staggering on your feet, man. How long has it been since you've eaten?
Oh, several days, boss. It ain't just in me to beg. And times is hard out here.
All right. Go get something to eat and meet me behind the store in a few minutes.
There was still no sign of the Circle 45 hands. Smoke walked up the alley. Connie was sitting on the loading dock, wolfing down a huge sandwich and drinking a bottle of sarsaparilla. The puncher grinned at Smoke. He was missing 2 front teeth, and Smoke suspected they'd been knocked out in a brawl.
After 3 of these sandwiches, I could take on a mama bear with cubs.
3?
I eat quick when they shooting to be done.
Sally appeared at the back.
I'm laying in extra supplies. Your new hand can put away the food.
Smoke shook his head, and Connie brushed a few crumbs off his patched shirt and drained a sarsaparilla. Connie checked his Colt and loaded up the empty chamber. He hopped off the loading dock.
Now, let's go see your varmint, boss.
As they walked, Smoke brought Connie up to date.
I know Clint Black. He's as low down as they come. no mercy or feelings for nobody in him. If you have to shoot a rabid animal, you're scared of it, but you can feel sorry for it, because he didn't want the disease. But I could shoot Clint Black or Judd Howells and not feel nothing. I'd try to work for him. Man, I can't harm no woman or child, and Clint didn't used to neither, until farmers just got so many around here, there wasn't no stopping them. And then he burned out and killed a whole bunch of them. I worked 1 week for him and then hauled my ashes. And don't feel sorry for no hand that hires on with the Circle 45. After they've been there a week, they know what's going on.
Smoke turned toward the street, and the boys fell in with him.
Are we going out in the street and face them gun handlers, boss?
No, Malvern. You men aren't gunfighters. We're going to make them come to us and meet them around these shacks here. We'll step out into the street, and then, in my word, dive for cover and start shooting.
I like your style.
Make your shots count, Connie. With all that crowd up yonder in the saloon, there's got to be one with your size.
If they've got any sense at all, they'll have it in their minds to wait until there's about 50 feet between us before they pull. But that fat one is getting nervous already. See how stiff he's walking.
That's Fatso Ross. I want him.
You can have him, Stoney. Bad as you shoot, you need a wide target.
Art Long's had his eyes on me for a spell. Me and him's had words more than once. Even at this distance, I can see that he's got his eyes straight on me.
Behind the windows of stores and homes, the citizens of Blackstown were lined up, watching the slow walk toward death.
Ballard. He fancies himself a gunslinger. He's in for a surprise. I always could outfight, outshoot, and outdrink that lowlife.
Couple of more seconds. Get ready. I've changed my mind. I'm gonna open this dance and get it over with.
Mason! It's a good day to die. Are you ready? Or have you lost your guts?
Tex Mason's hands lifted and closed around the butts of his gun.
Now!
The Double D hands jerked iron, fired, and scrambled for cover. The move took the Circle 45 guns by surprise. They had not been expecting that, and they were caught flat-footed and in the open. Fatso Ross was down in the street, and so were Tex Mason and Art Long. Nick Ballard was trying to hunt cover, dragging a busted leg as he scurried off to the side of the street and dropped down in a shallow ditch. Tex Mason was down, but he was not out. Smoke's bullet was true, but the gun hand still had fight left in it. Sitting in the dust, he filled both hands with colts and eared the hammers back and let them bang. Smoke, down on one knee, leveled a .44 and ended the bloody career of Tex with one shot. Waymore coolly put a slug in John Wood and the hand doubled over, dropping his pistol. Waymore got a bullet burn on his left arm.
Oh, shit, that's smart!
George Miller got a slug into the leg of Eli that knocked the puncher down.
Oh, you motherfucker!
Fatso staggered to his boots.
Hey, you fat bastard! Over here!
Art Long panicked and started to limp toward the boardwalk. He got as far as the deserted building that once housed Nadine's dress shop. Smoke's hat was blown off his head just as he turned his guns on Austin Charles.
I like that hat, you son of a bitch.
The fancy engraved Colts fell from his numb fingers, and Austin collapsed to the street. Ballard had dragged himself off behind Nadine's and was slowly staggering toward the saloon, hoping to get to his horse and get the hell gone. He lurched past the rear of the leather shop just as the owner stepped out and conked him on the head with the butt of a shotgun. Weldon Ball and Roy Cantrell made a dash for safety and jumped into the saddles of the first horses they reached. They fogged it out of town on stolen horses. Smoke and the Double D hands slowly stood up. Stoney had a cut on his face. Waymore's arm was bleeding. Eli's leg was throbbing with pain, and he was supported by the strong arm of Connie. No one else was hurt. Fatso was dead in the dirt. Tex Mason was dead. George Miller was alive, but not for long. Eli's bullet had punched right through him, high up, nicking a lung. Austin Charles was dead. John Wood was badly wounded. The dead were hauled off to be measured for a box, and the wounded were escorted to Doc Garrett's office. Smoke went to the store for a new Stetson. He picked out one with a lower crown.
Presents less of a target. Maybe this one will last me longer.
Smoke looked around as his men came in. Doc Garrett wanted to keep Eli for a day just for insurance.
You boys get the supplies loaded up and escort the ladies back to the ranch. I'll wait around for the sheriff and give a statement. Get a few more boxes of ammo. After this, there's no telling what Clint Black might do. Stay close to the ranch and no riding alone with the herd.
Clint Black was furious when the deputy and his posse thundered into his front yard, but he had sense enough to know that to fight would be stupid.
Get Weldon Ball and Roy Cantrell out here right now. They're under arrest for horse stealing.
Deputy.
Lucas lifted the muzzle of the Winchester. The posse members had fanned out and circled so they could cover in all directions. 20 rifles were lifted.
I said, now, Clint.
Or you'll do what?
I'll place you under arrest for interfering with the peace officer and then kill you right where you stand.
Harry, I'm bringing the men out. Just calm down. Everybody calm down.
Tell one of your men to saddle horses for them, Clint, and bring out those horses they stole from town.
Do it, Tom.
Judd walked up with Weldon Ball and Roy Cantrell shuffling along behind.
Up.
The Circle 45 men slowly mounted their horses.
You won't be breaking these two out. There's been some cell changes at the jail while we were repairing the other damage. Be seeing you, Mr. Black.
You boys get busy doing something. You might get together the gear or the men who ain't gonna be coming back and see if they got clean clothes to get buried in.
Judd turned to Clint.
We gotta talk, boss. Right now.
In the house. Speak your piece, Judd. You know you can shoot straight with me.
It's got to stop, Clint. This just can't go on. We're going to be burying 6 men tomorrow. 6 more men.
I've had this talk before. Thought we settled it then.
We settled nothing, Clint. Clint, did you see the looks on the faces of the men in that posse? Did you really see them? They're not going to ever bow and scrape for you. Not ever again. You've got to understand that. You've been the big bull in the woods for years, and you're going to have to settle for it being over. Cleon's got a newspaper from Helena. Got it from the stage driver. This here war is front page news. Smoke Jensen's name is like bees to honey. There'll be reporters in here for long, and they'll dig and pry to see what started all the ruckus and find out about the ambush and the kids getting killed and all of it. Then what kind of a light will you be under? I'll tell you what kind. A real bad light. Now, we gotta stop this, and stop it right now.
Go on, Judd. You're not through.
Just like I said to you before, the last time we talked. We fire all these gun hands and get back to raising a beef. We live and let live and mind our own business.
And live with the knowledge that a damn gunfighter and a bunch of weak-livered two-bit ranchers and saloon keepers and storekeepers beat us? Not me, Judd. Not me.
All right, Clint. If that's the way you want it.
Is this it, Judd? Is it over for you?
Yeah, Clint, for me it's over. I won't stay in the game with a stacked deck. See you, Clint.
Clint sat for a long time in his study. He didn't drink. He'd been drinking far too much of late, and for him to come up with any sort of plan, he needed to be clear-headed. He'd heard the sounds of a horse trotting away and knew it was Judd. Judd. He and the man had been together for years. And now his foreman and best friend had lost his guts. He rose and walked to the front porch and waved to a hand.
Oh, yeah, your boss?
Is that Judd riding out?
Yes, sir. We packed his duds, got him a pack horse, and when he was gone in 15 minutes, I never thought Judd would turn his back to you.
Neither did I. Tell Bronco Ford I want to see him.
Well, right away, boss.
Clint sat down on the porch. Bronco walked over, and Clint waved him to a seat.
How many men we still have around, Bronco?
I said 18 last count, and that includes you and me and the cook.
God, a month ago I had 50.
Some just rode off and didn't look back, boss. I reckon Smoke Jensen read some scriptures to them that we busted out of jail. They sure cut out. We got some with busted legs and busted arms and knotty heads. You want I should send out some wires and see what I can drag up?
Yeah, today. I don't care where you get them or what they've done in their past. The meaner the better. You're now foreman of this ranch, Bronco. Move your gear into the foreman's house. You get rid of Smoke Jensen for me, and you'll have a good job for the rest of your life. That's a personal promise from me.
Might be best if I flag down the stage and send them wires out of Helena.
Good idea, do that.
Get packed to go. I'll have money for you when you're ready.
Buckskin Divas is around. He busted out of Yuma some months back. I know where he's heading.
Get him. Get all you can find. I'll turn this country red with blood of any who dare stand up to me.
Sounds like my kind of war, boss. I'll be ready to go in 15 minutes.
I'll be here. Right here. And I'll be here when all those who oppose me are buried.
Judd Howes rode into Blackstown and stabled his horses. He planned to spend one night, then be on the trail come first light. He knew where he was going, and when he got there, he was going to stay. He conducted his business at the bank, closing out his sizable account. Then he walked over to the sheriff's office. Harris had just ridden in and was talking over the morning's events with Smoke when Judd opened the door.
I'm peaceful, and I intend to stay that way from now on. I want to talk to both of you.
Fine. That's probably very good for you and very bad for us.
Yeah, that's the way I see it. And that's why I come over to talk. Now, if you think I'm here to confess to anything, you're wrong. Now, Clint and me been friends for years and years, and I'll admit we both done some terrible things. But for me, that's past. This is now. I ain't here to talk against him. I got me a pretty good hunch he'll make that no-count Bronco Ford foreman. Which is fine as long as Clint don't plan on running no cattle, because Bronco is a gun handler, and that's all he's been since he growed up. Now then, Bronco will be calling in some salty old boys that he knows, and he knows plenty of them. Clint ain't going to give up. Put that out of your heads. He's going to fight until he's either top man on the hill again or he's dead. That's the way it's going to be. I don't like you, Jensen, but I ain't going to fight you. I've seen men like you before. Not many, but a few. You really ain't no better than the men you fight. Not when it comes down to the nut cutting, because you still kill. You got bodies planted all over the West, but you kill for some sort of highfalutin notion that otherwise decent folk find acceptable. That's always puzzled me. But I realize something else, too. Men like you nearly always win. I don't know why that is, but it's true. You're going to have to kill Clint Black, Jensen. Or you will, Harris. There ain't no other way. And I just don't want to be around to see that. I can't bring myself to wish you boys luck. I just can't do it. Because I don't know whether I'd mean it or not. Men like Clint built this country. Oh, they're hard men. And they've done terrible things to others who've come out later, when it was a lot easier and them others come in to squat on land that was settled by Clint and men like him. Well, that's neither here nor there.
You want to speak to Weldon or Cantrell?
I got nothing to say to them two. You'll never see me again, Harris. Nor will you ever hear of me. Judd Howes is not my real name. When I get to where I'm going, I'll have a new name and paper to prove it. I'll ranch and not do no harm to any man who don't come pushing and shoving and looking for it. I was going to spend the night, but I think I'll just ride on and get clear of this place. You're a good man, Harris. I mean that. And when all this is over, you'll do well at the Circle 45, because it'll be yours. I just hope you change the brand. You, now I ain't got no use for you, Jensen. I just don't like you one goddamn bit.
Strange man. There goes a man who is just as vicious as my brother, probably had a hand in planning the ambush against you and the Duggan twins, and who now says he's had enough. I never thought he'd leave my brother.
We'll probably have about a week apiece around here, Harris, until your brother can import a fresh crew of gun hands. Then I expect we'll face the problem and wrap it up.
You act like it's just a job of work for you.
How do you want me to behave, Harris?
Oh, hell, I didn't mean it the way it came out, Smoke. I'm certainly not defending my brother. This mess can be laid right at Clint's feet, and I know it. But if you'll forgive me for saying it, I really wish you, my brother, and all his hired guns would just go away, settle this somewhere else.
I'll face your brother anywhere he picks, guns or fists. Doesn't make any difference to me.
Yeah, I know that too. He's not going to do that. Not yet. But Judd was right when he said that one of us will have to kill him.
Could you?
If he braces me and pulls. You, me, Smoke, we're gunfighters. You know that reflex would take over. I wouldn't hesitate. I'd be sick afterward. But I wouldn't stand there and let him kill me.
You through with me?
I wish. Oh, yeah. Someday there'll be laws out here against men settling arguments with guns. But that day's a long way off. Watch your back riding home, Smoke.
Always do, Harris. Always do.
Joe Owens seen Bronco Ford flagging down the stage this afternoon.
Stoney spoke to Smoke after supper that evening.
Heading for Helena.
He's gone to get more men. I expected it. Judd said that's what Clint would do.
Judd's really gone?
He talked to the sheriff and me, and then I watched him ride out, leading a pack horse. Said he didn't like me at all, but yes, he's gone for good.
Well, I reckon stranger things has happened. So what do we do now?
Look after the herd, mend fences, stay out of trouble. In about a week, we'll have all the trouble we can handle. I want one man in town at all times, starting tomorrow. By this time, Bronco has sent his wires and men will be coming in. Some of them by stage. The last stage runs at 3. So that'll give the men time to get back here for supper. I want to know who comes in and how many. The men Bronco will hire will be known gunfighters. Easy to spot. And he'll probably hire at least one long-distance shooter, too.
Lousy damn back shooter. Yeah, you're right. I'm surprised Clint hasn't done that already.
He just hasn't thought of it. But Bronco will. For sure he'll pick up 2 or 3 or more in Helena. And there'll be more hanging around Butte. It won't take long for them to get here. Tell the men who ride in not to brace any of these old boys. Bronco will be hiring professionals, and they'll be quick on the shoot.
That back shooter will be coming in for you, boss.
It's been tried before. I'm still around. You boys relax while you can. In a few days, it's going to get real tense around here.
The first of the hired guns arrived 3 days after Bronco sent the wires. Waymore described him to Smoke.
The first one is a bad hombre called Tall Mosley. He comes high. The redhead is an Irishman named Danny O'Brien. Danny came from a real nice family down in southern Colorado. He went bad early. Killed his brother and left the country. He's left a lot of men dead behind him. I can't place the other one you described.
I heard him called Ned in the saloon.
Ned Burr. He'd make Sam Bass look like a Baptist preacher.
The following day, Connie reported back. He looked shaken.
Man, some bad ones come in this day. I seen Luke Jennings, Little John Perkins, and Tom Wiley. Half a dozen more I didn't know, but they looked right capable.
You catch any names?
Yeah, there was Dan, a fella called Rod, and one other name that sounded familiar, Morton.
Might be Dan Hutton. Rod is short for Rodman. I don't know his first name. Morton is probably Henry Morton. They're all bad ones. Clint's hiring the best, or the worst, depending on how you look at it.
The next day, Stoney reported back, shaking his head.
Boss, we gotta hire some hands, gun hands. You ain't never seen the like of what rode in this day. I heard him talking. Clint wired him money to ride the trains in and money to buy fine horses when they got to the getting off point. And they was all dressed up fancy. James Otis, Paul Stark, Ed Burke, Tom Lessing, Hal Bruner, Big Dan Barrington, half a dozen more that I didn't know.
Rider coming, boss.
Smoke stood on the porch and shielded his eyes. Then he smiled.
Well, I'll be double damned.
You know that feller, boss?
Huggy Charles.
Huggy Charles? The Arizona gunfighter?
That's him.
You old war horse, you! Damn, but you're looking fine, boy.
You're looking fit and fine yourself, Huggy. Sally, we got company.
Sally came out on the porch and started smiling. She skipped down the steps and Huggy grabbed her.
Sally, girl, how you doing, missy?
Now you boys see why he's called Huggy. He never misses a chance to hug a woman. Slim or fat, tall or short, beautiful or so bad looking she'd stop an eagle in a dive.
Huggy grabs them all.
It's been too many years since you've stopped by the Sugarloaf, Huggy. Just too many years.
Well, I got me a spread down on the Verde. I was up in Denver looking for stock to improve my herd. Herefords are the way to go now. And I heard about all the trouble up here. Why, I just saddled up and took to riding. Here I am.
In time for supper, too.
If you cooked it, honey, that in itself is worth the ride.
Huggy!
Denver stepped out onto the porch.
Yo, biscuit-stealing outlaw!
My God, Smoke, whatever possessed you to hire something as disreputable as that old coot? Me and him go back more years than either one of us care to think about.
Later that evening, everyone gathered in the house for supper.
Del Rovere is a day behind me. I told him what was happening up here, and he started winding up his business, and he'll be along.
I haven't laid eyes on Del since... Why, it's gotta be before Nicole was murdered.
Yeah, I come through that part of the country some years back, Smoke. That land is being farmed by a real nice couple, and they're doing well. I told them the story of the graves. They must have come in right after you left. They've been taking care of Nicole and the baby's resting place. Flowers all the time around the graves.
Good. Excuse me, everyone.
Smoke got up and walked out onto the porch. Connie started to rise and join him, and Sally touched his arm.
No, let him alone. Nicole and Smoke had a special relationship. Part of him will always belong to her memory, and that is the way it should be. It was a terrible thing what those men did to her and a tiny baby.
Did Smoke really stake one of them out over a big anthill and pour honey on him?
Yes, he did. He also gelded another and cauterized the wound with a hot running iron.
Damn, he must have been some riled up.
When my husband gets riled up, Connie, believe me, you'll know it.